Hey everyone, this is Paul from the Bearded Vegans. Just another quick disclaimer. I know we had one last week. So we have been working on, Andy and I have been working on better ways to record over Skype, and we're trying something different out today. It was still a little glitchy, so there's parts where my audio got a little messed up because we were recording the Skype call. So we're still working on it, but hopefully this episode you'll find it is a little better quality than the last one. And again, hopefully the next episode will be even better. And then again, the next one will be even better, and it'll be just be grand fantastic. So yeah, we're working on it, and enjoy the show. What's up, Beardos? Welcome to episode 6 of The Bearded Vegans. I'm Paul.
And I'm Andy.
And we are The Bearded Vegans, a podcast featuring a dissection of all things vegan.
If you're just tuning in for the first time, you can find all of our previous episodes on the Commentist Network, and that's at thecommentist.com. And you can reach us by emailing us at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com and follow us on Instagram at thebeardedvegans.
In today's episode, we will be discussing vegan news, moving on into our topic of the week, which is, does the animal rights movement need more meat eaters? And concluding with an interview with Brian Manowitz, also known as the Vegan Black Metal Chef. So last week, we started a new little segment entitled Where is Andy? Cue theme music, where we're following Andy's exploits around the United States as he drives his van from VegFest to VegFest. And he's actually... he, as in the person I'm talking to, Andy, is in the same spot that he was last week, which is still in St. Louis printing some t-shirts. But is there any new restaurants that you've tried out, or is there anything noteworthy that happened in this past week?
Well, actually, last night I went to the City Museum, which is not so much a museum as it is a giant playground for children. It's a very weird place created by a very interesting person, I'm assuming. And you can kind of, there's like all these like very small holes for children to crawl into and really could get badly hurt, I think. It seems like a real liability. There's just areas where like full-grown adults would not be able to get inside of. But it was a very interesting experience. So I did that last night, and I'm moving a little slow today because of it, because there's like a 10-story slide you have to climb up 10 stories to get to and all that stuff.
Dang.
I would highly recommend everyone check it out. It also contains the world's largest pair of underwear, so I got to see that. On the food front, I finally got to check out Treehouse, which is St. Louis's fancy vegan restaurant, and I knew I would end up there at least once. And the food, you know, it was not the best place that I've tried in St. Louis. Did have a totally enjoyable meal, and it seems like it'd be a nice place to go for a date or like a post-graduation dinner, something like that. But there's a couple other places that we've been going to repeatedly that I would hit up way more often. I had this dessert that was supposed to be a key lime pie, and they told me it came as a souffle, and it came in like a glass, and there was like a meringue kind of topping on it, which was charred, and that was really cool. But the crust was just like dessert sand. Like, I don't know how else to describe it other than just dessert sand. Like, there was no binding in it whatsoever. And I guess you're supposed to mix it with the middle layer, which was just like lime goo. So it was a very interesting thing. And if that sounds interesting to you, I would suggest checking it out, because for what it was very well done. Aside from that, just been hitting up all the regular spots, and actually went to this place called Vine, which has some falafel that I would say rivals Tangier's, which we mentioned in episode one. It was very good. But that's all that's going on exciting on the food front in St. Louis as far as any new developments go.
So dessert sand and a park that may or may not have been created by a person. Very nice. Very nice.
An interesting person.
All right. So let's get into our news. What do you have for us this week?
So this first thing, I don't know if it's like a huge piece of news, but I thought it would be really interesting to mention. And that is that a couple of days ago, a chicken got loose at the Bay Bridge in San Francisco and caused a mighty traffic jam. And the thing about it that made me kind of scratch my head was that there's footage of it, and it's quite comical of people getting out of their cars and trying to scoot the chicken out of the way or catch the chicken. And eventually police came and apprehended the chicken. And there's a shot of this chicken sitting in the backseat of a police cruiser. but the thing that struck me interesting about it was that, you know, 9 billion chickens are killed in our country, in the United States alone, every year. And I'm sure the vast majority of the people that were trying to chase that chicken out of the road and not cause harm to the chicken are people who eat chicken in their everyday lives. Yeah. What do you make of that, Paul?
I think it's, and we've touched upon this before, it's just the type of thing where as soon as you personalize something for someone, they end up caring more about it. And it's just another case of people kind of, when they're eating chicken, they're just so, they disassociate it with it ever being an actual living animal. And when there is an actual living chicken crossing the road, maybe to get to the other side, maybe to just block traffic, but it's right there in front of you, and there's no way that you can't acknowledge that this is an actual living thing, and that, and most people, even meat eaters, don't want to just kill that thing for no reason. And and that's definitely, even though this is like, it's a silly story, it's telling for vegan activists that's one powerful way to get people to consider eating less meat or consider becoming vegetarian or vegan, is to really personalize their dinner plate for them. And I don't know if personalize is the right word, but just make it more real for them and get them to see that this was actually a living thing, just like the chicken that's blocking traffic.
Yeah, absolutely. For me, I feel the same way about it, that it just shows that, as we know, people like to consider themselves animal lovers. No one would want to personally harm an animal. And so once that opportunity is presented with them where they could just run over the chicken, they're in their car, and, you know, animals get killed by cars every day, but they're in a position where they're going a little slower because the toll booth is coming up, and they had the opportunity to not harm a chicken, which is, by many people's measure, the most exploited animal on the planet, just by numbers wise and how horribly they're treated. So it's definitely something that gives me hope that, you know, people can care about chickens, and hopefully people can use that, this story, to make that connection.
Yeah. And it's funny too, because like we see deer a lot of times we're driving, people unfortunately hit a lot of deer. And I feel like if it was a deer, people wouldn't have stopped, because that's an animal that you do see driving. And I think it's just the fact that it was this chicken, and it's just like, it's putting something into a context that has a place being, that just like really throws people off. And I don't have any kind of connection to how they should be vegan because of this, but I think it's just interesting that, I think that's a big part of it, is that there's this chicken in this context that people don't think chicken should be in. And I think it just makes people like, oh, I have no idea what to do.
Absolutely. All right. And so our next bit of news is kind of a big story that's been breaking over the last couple of days. And it's a follow-up to our discussion about Just Mayo last week. And when we talked about the FDA sending a letter, strongly worded letter, to Hampton Creek, the makers of Just Mayo, last week, saying they had to change the name because it was misleading, if they weren't actually mayonnaise. It was only a very small line in one article that I read, but that there was some Freedom of Information Act requests, some FOIA requests put in by Ryan Shapiro, who is an activist who has basically, that's his thing, is he puts in these Freedom of Information requests, these FOIA requests, to find out whatever the government has on various activists and authors and all these things, and always turns up some pretty interesting stuff. So Ryan and his lawyer, Jeffrey Light, have uncovered what is amounting to a government conspiracy against vegan mayonnaise. And over at QZ.com, courts, the article title that I'm getting a lot of this information from is titled, "There is literally a U.S. government conspiracy against vegan mayo." And it's been getting a ton of coverage.
It sounds like it would be a clickbaity title article, but it is kind of, there's some actual truth behind it, and it's a bizarre story.
Yeah, and it's like maybe 10% hyperbolic, but it's definitely a lot of truth to it. and it's been getting so much coverage in so many mainstream websites and publications, so it's going to be really weird to see where this thing goes to. But essentially, what all these FOIA requests uncovered was that the American Egg Board, which is an egg research and promotion group overseen by the USDA, and the USDA is essentially, they're there to promote the products that they represent, like meat and dairy. They're not really looking out for the public's best interest necessarily, and there's a lot of stories that demonstrate that. But the Egg Board has been trying to shut down Hampton Creek's Just Mayo. And so from that article at QZ.com, in an August 2013 email, Joanne Ivey, president of the American Egg Board, refers to Just Mayo as, quote, a crisis and major threat to the future of the egg product business, end quote. The email concluded with the line, what are we doing at American Egg Board with regard to this competing product? We need to have an answer, exclamation point. So there are our hypothesis that this was all happening because it was affecting someone's bottom line has been borne out in these emails. Paul, what do you make of this so far?
It's definitely like it's so bizarre that this stuff is going on. And I guess as we mentioned last week, it really boils down to one might say it hard boils down to the fact that the egg industry does feel threatened by Just Mayo, which is amazing, which is awesome. But there's just it's like, I would strongly recommend you read this article. There's just these bizarre tactics that they're using, and it ends in two quotes from the it's from an executive from one company that makes egg products, and then it might be two executives from two different companies that at meetings they've just made threats about killing the CEO of Hampton Creek. And even like if it's in a joking manner, it's still just kind of like really, it's like this bizarre thing. It's like something out of a spy movie or something like that, and it's very strange.
Absolutely. And I feel like anyone would be hard pressed to say that they were legitimate threats. Like, they're probably in jest, they're probably joking, but man, that is such bad form. And to have that on, you know, hard copy on an email that's been uncovered, is, it doesn't bode well. And I don't know how it would be interpreted in a court of law, but it's just like, okay, the lengths that this thing is going to is pretty wild. And so the emails, they uncovered that the Egg Board came up with a bunch of different tactics to try and tackle this issue. And it's something that is like, okay, here comes a new company that is making something that's more sustainable, obviously better for animals, better for the planet, longer shelf life, tastes just as good. And this Egg Board, instead of spending their money to promote eggs, is using it to try and squash some competition. And there's been some interpretations of that saying that that's illegal, that's against their mission. So we'll see how that plays out in the, you know, coming months. But the outline of their strategy, the first one was get the FDA to handle it. So we've already seen that one starting, and we're not sure how that's going to end. And the next one was get Just Mayo out of Whole Foods. And so it was revealed that the Egg Board was communicating with someone who's sort of a very influential food person. And they were talking about paying this person off to convince Whole Foods to drop Just Mayo. And there's emails where the person's like, all it takes is one phone call. But the other person's like, yeah, he just needs some money. So that's pretty wild. That's pretty out there. That's very drastic. And then they were talking about step three, pay a PR firm to get the message out via bloggers. And they found examples of blogs that were using the wording that was being supplied by the American Egg Board, and they were paying a PR firm $43,000 to make this happen. And the fourth thing is that they want to help a major corporation with a lawsuit against Just Mayo and Hampton Creek. And of course, that was the Unilever lawsuit last year. So very multi-pronged approach in trying to shut down Just Mayo. And it's incredible the lengths that, you know, people are going to hold on to the past and stay the past. And they're clearly in what is becoming an antiquated industry. What's your read on all of that?
So I really do hope that that similar to the Unilever lawsuit, that this kind of ends up blowing up in their face, and it just gives Just Mayo more promotion and publicity, because that's what it seemed like happened during the other lawsuit. And I hope that's what happens again, because it's a great, I love it, and I'd be really bummed on a number of levels if it got discontinued for any reason.
Yeah, it's hard to imagine that it would be totally discontinued. Seems like the worst case scenario is that they have to change their name, which is not catastrophic, but obviously what they chose to name the product was very strategic.
Mm-hmm.
And, their choice to not make quite as much money and to make it something that's accessible and in most cases cheaper than buying egg-based mayonnaise and trying to get it into 7-Eleven and Costco and trying to be an egg replacement for universities and, these corporate kitchens and contracts and stuff. It's all very strategic. So I think that they would be able to recover if they had to change the name, but so much groundwork has already been laid that it would be not a good thing, to say the least. I do think that you're probably right that this is going to end up being really good for Hampton Creek and Just Mayo, especially with how it's been played out in the media, is very much saying the government's conspiring against a product that's better for the planet. So it's to me, there's no way it will play out in the court of public opinion other than people going, well, that's ridiculous. Like, why is the government wasting time and money on trying to crush competition for one industry?
Yeah, definitely.
And so that'll lead us into our topic of the week, which, as we said at the top of the show, was, do we need more meat-eating animal rights advocates? And this is spawned by an article with pretty much the same name, found at, again, QZ.com. And the article, which is written by Brian Kateman, it says, we need more meat-eating animal rights advocates. And so the story, the whole article, it's not super long. We'll read a little bit from it as we go along. But the bookends are talking about the author having experience sitting in a Chipotle, and then some activists file in and they start chanting. And the author does not mention the group by name, but anyone that's been around and doing some activism knows that he's referring to Direct Action Everywhere, who's one of their primary campaigns is the It's Not Food, It's Violence campaign. They've been doing it at Chipotle. They've been doing it at Whole Foods. And they sort of go in and they say their point is to disrupt, places that have normalized animal violence. So the article uses that as the framework, saying these people came in and all the people that were sitting were confused or angry. And within 60 seconds, the protesters were gone. And the author overheard someone saying, quote, one reason to be thankful we're not crazy vegans. And so the author uses this as a way to frame his argument, which is that we need to be welcoming in advocates who do eat animal products. And there's a couple of pieces of evidence that he uses to frame that and to cite for why we should be doing this. And just to read through them, our idea was born from a few simple observations. One, despite decades of activism, few people are vegetarian and even fewer are vegan. Most vegans and vegetarians stop being vegan and vegetarian. Many vegetarians aren't actually vegetarian, and that links to a study saying that a lot of people who claim to be vegetarian actually do eat fish or chicken. And then the general public perceives vegans in a less than ideal light, and those who reduce their meat consumption are more likely to become vegetarian, and those who become vegetarian are more likely to become vegan. So, Paul, what do you make of all of this?
So, first of all, I just wanted to say this episode of Bearded Vegans is sponsored by QZ, the website where we're taking all of our articles from.
It's a fantastic website, Paul.
Yeah. So, I mean, we've kind of touched upon similar topics before when we're talking about like what we perceive as the better ways of promoting veganism. And to me, it's weird because I kind of agree with some of what the author's saying. I kind of disagree with some of what he's saying, but I do feel like the best way to make someone either eat less meat, go vegetarian, or go vegan is to engage them in a discussion, not to attack them, which it would seem like this sorts of protests, it's kind of just like, it's a quick thing. They come in, they're saying like you're supporting these cruel practices, blah, 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 blah. And then they're gone, which doesn't really leave, it doesn't leave any room to have discussion, to open up any sort of forum. So it's kind of like people, the people that are eating are going to act, and then there's kind of no, there's no discussion for them to have afterwards. So they're just going to have that feeling, and that feeling is probably not going to change. So I think the author's right that maybe this isn't the best tactic. But at the same time, I don't think that there's anything wrong with promoting veganism and saying, and trying to get someone, saying to someone, you should go vegan and here's all the reasons. And then from there, once you're having a discussion with someone, you can talk about like, well, first you can reduce, if it's someone that's been raised in this culture where they're eating meat every single day. You can then, once you tell them why they should go vegan, you can then give them the steps, give them the support that they can do. And maybe that support is saying, okay, let's try Meatless Mondays first. And then let's try not eating any meat 4 days a week. Let's then try going vegetarian, and let's try going vegan, and supporting that person. And obviously, if you have a personal relationship with that person, you can check in with them and help them out in any way that you can. So in that sense, I disagree with the author that I do think we should still be promoting veganism, but then giving people the supports for it. So it's kind of, I was thinking like, well, some of this I agree with, some of it I don't agree with. What did you think about it?
I'm pretty much in line with you. I guess that's not a huge surprise that we often have similar views on this stuff. I think that a lot of it is an issue of the framing of the argument that feels a little weird to me. And I think the first thing to point out is that Direct Action Everywhere, their group, their goal, as they've explicitly stated, is their goal is not necessarily to make more vegans, but to make more activists. And we could probably have a whole separate show on Direct Action Everywhere and what we think of their tactics and what other people think of their tactics and whatnot. But so I feel like the author kind of misses the point that they're not necessarily trying to do what he thinks is best for animals, which is, of course, to get people to reduce or eliminate their animal consumption. So it almost just feels like a weird attempt to sort of throw in a slam against Direct Action Everywhere. And I'll say I am not a fan of that tactic at all. And part of me is like, what are the odds that this person was actually sitting somewhere in a Chipotle when some activists came in and did that? It just seems like a convenient way to frame the whole story and to say, this is how we should be doing activism. But I do completely agree with you that veganism should sort of be what we're shooting for. And there's plenty of psychological and psychology and studies that point to the fact that making a big ask of someone and then scaling it back and making a small ask, you're way more likely to have success than starting with that small ask. So, you know, when I do activism and I talk to people, the first thing I, you know, am sort of going for is letting them know that, you know, if you don't like what you see in these videos, by far the best thing you can do is to stop eating all animal products, stop using animals, etc. And then you sort of see their eyes glaze over and it's like, you get that overwhelming feeling. And we've discussed in the show before, it's overwhelming when you're thinking about going vegan or vegetarian or even cutting out red meat or something. And that's when you start to go, well, let's work together. Let's find a good step for you. That'll be a good first step. And maybe that means go vegetarian. Maybe that means have a vegan Monday. You know, there's so many different steps that you can take. And so the article talks about the value of those things, but the way that it's framed is saying that, like, we need people that eat animals to be in this movement. And it's hard for me to agree with that because there is such a divide between someone that says they love and care for animals and someone who is actively exploiting them, which is what someone is doing if they are consuming animals. So go ahead.
And I think what this article says happens, which I'm not sure that this happens, is that they're saying that we should have people that eat less meat to promote eating less meat to other people. Whereas I feel as though in the actual world, It's the animal rights activists who are mostly vegan. It's those people that are getting others to eat less meat. It's not like, I don't think, as I know, I really don't think right now there are many animal rights activists that still eat meat that are actively promoting eating less meat to other people. Maybe I just don't know that exists, but it's like, cause they're using the statistic as you mentioned that, that there are 400 million fewer animals were killed for food last year than in 2007. And it says mostly because of the growing population of people who cut back on meat. But I think that there is a growing population of people who cut back on meat because there are animal rights activists who are vegan. So it's like, I feel like they're using that statistic to say that vegans can't get people to eat less meat. Vegans are only promoting like go vegan or nothing. And there, I mean, I should say there are people that have that idea where if you don't go vegan, you're a bad person. And like every step of the, unless you're full vegan, you're a terrible person. And there are people that have those views. There are advocates that have those views. But I feel like as a whole, the people that are most effective are the ones that are, like we said, they start with the big thing, try to go vegan, and then we work on the smaller steps along the way. But again, it's the vegan advocates that are doing that. It's not, I don't even know what to call them, less meat eating advocates that still eat meat.
So yeah, so the author does actually give a term to that and says that it is called reducitarian. It's a new philosophy in an attempt to unite vegans, vegetarians, and those who are trying to reduce their meat consumption, whatever the reason might be.
And I think that's a weird phrase, that last part that says no matter what the reason is or no matter the motivation, because this whole article is about animal rights. So it's obvious, like they're not talking about health vegans. They're not talking about environmental vegans. They're talking about animal rights vegans. And so the motivation is in what the article is talking about, the motivation is animal welfare. And it's weird to ask vegans to accept someone that's like, okay, I stopped eating meat once a day. Like, why aren't you okay with that? Well, because it's like, that's the, like, there is a specific goal to being a animal rights activist. And we want people, even though we know that it may take some steps and it may take some support to get people to become vegan. It's like, it's weird to ask us to be, and of course I'm referring to us as, I should just say myself, because I can't speak for any other vegan. It's weird to me that they're asking me to be okay with people just like stopping at this one step, stopping halfway or not even halfway. So that's why I thought that little phrase was weird. And it's almost like the author didn't think through that. It's like why aren't vegans okay with people eating just less meat? It's like, if you think about why we're doing it, then it should become pretty obvious why we're not okay with it.
Yeah. You know, it's like ultimately the animals don't necessarily care what the motivations are, but, you know, studies show that those who do it for ethical reasons are the ones who are the most likely to stick with it in the long term. So, you know, of course, if someone, even if they're just going on a diet or something and they reduce their animal consumption or eliminate their animal consumption, that's great for the short term. But, you know, we should care about the motivations that people have for going vegan and, or even reducing their animal consumption because of that.
And I think, of course, this is not to say that we shouldn't applaud when someone does reduce their meat consumption. We applaud them and then we challenge them to go the next step. So it's not that what this author is saying is that we're not saying you need to go vegan right now. It's all or nothing. We're saying like, it's okay to do this in steps. And that's what I think a lot of people do. I did it in steps. And I think a lot of other people did it in steps, and it's okay to acknowledge that achievement that these people have made, especially again, cause we're living in this culture where being vegan is the minority, and the majority of people are eating meat, and it's difficult, and it may seem like an overwhelming task to even just eat a little bit less meat. So it's like vegans have to keep that in mind, but I don't think we should stop pushing people once they've given up just a little bit of meat.
Yeah. And you know, I feel like the author wouldn't say that like it's okay for someone to stop at just reducing, but it, yeah, obviously, it seems like the end goal is the zero consumption, but But yeah, it just feels so weird that it kind of just, it seems like the article is saying, like, I guess I'm sort of projecting what I think the author would want, but it seems like the article itself, what we're given to actually use as evidence, is saying that it's like, what we need are people who eat meat in the movement. End of story, you know? And the article, after listing all of the reasons why we should be promoting things like that, says, quote, given these facts, we concluded that the animal rights community's current non-pluralist message of go vegan is unrealistic and unnecessarily alienating to the vast majority of people who are unfortunately unwilling to completely eliminate animal products from their diets. This preoccupation with increasing the number of vegans rather than focusing on decreasing the total amount of meat consumed by our society may be the biggest failure of the animal liberation movement to date. And I think that that's really oversimplifying the current animal rights movement. And I know that that's like a criticism by a lot of sort of more hardline type activists, is that the major organizations don't have enough of a focus on go vegan, and that these organizations have adopted language like saying vegetarian instead of vegan, even though they only promote veganism in their recipes and whatnot. So I think that the movement is adopting a lot of those things, and the movement strongly advocates, at least, you know, this is as far as like mainstream organizations, Mercy for Animals, Compassion Over Killing, you know, groups of that nature, sort of on that sort of mid-tier, not quite PETA size, but those mid-tier organizations, they are advocating for those things. And so, you know, to bring it back to what you were saying, is that it is the vegans that are encouraging the reduction of animal products. And so when the statistic of 400 million fewer animals is brought up, it's like, well, that's there because there are these animal rights advocates who are pushing the information, pushing the videos to get out there. And it's, you know, I see very few people that eat animals and are out there promoting reduction of animal consumption. It is the animal rights advocates that are out there and doing that work.
Yeah. And I at least the people that I'm around, and I think I maybe am around a different set of animal activists than other people, but I don't see as much of the the Gary Yourofskys of the world that are saying you either go vegan or fuck you and you're a scummy person. It's like I don't see that tactic being used as much, and because again, I don't think that that's a great tactic, and I think that's kind of what this author is reducing the animal rights advocates down to, is that it's people that just say either you go vegan or I hate you. And it's again, it's not really what I'm personally seeing out there.
Yeah. And so, you know, maybe something we're overlooking is maybe this is an article just for those people. But you know, it's certainly painted like it's like the entire vegan movement isn't doing these things.
And I think this article, one of the things that feels off to me is that it reminds me of in like other articles talking about, say, racism that have the overall message of, oh, we're all allowed to have our own opinions and we need to respect each other's opinions no matter what they are. Those are kind of articles that go into like, oh, you can believe this, I can believe that, and we can all get along. And it's a very like, it's a very privileged perspective to have. And that's kind of what I got a little bit of feeling about this, where it's like, oh, you can be vegan and I can be a meat eater and we can all get along. But again, it's like that's going against what I'm trying to do.
Yeah. And, you know, in the last episode, I did talk with Tommy Knowles of Wildlife Defense League about, you know, how to bridge those gaps, how to make those coalitions with people who aren't necessarily fully on board with what you're doing. But, you know, when you're talking to people that are in the same boat as you and they just haven't quite decided to make that leap yet, it's hard to feel like it's okay to be like, it's okay if you just stop here. And, you know, the article does say that, you know, people who go vegetarian are more likely to go vegan and people who reduce are more likely to go vegetarian, and that, you know, the sort of the avalanche effect that happens there. But if all the message that's coming across is all you got to do is reduce, if everyone just reduced a little bit, we'd save a lot of animals. It's hard to feel like people are getting that second ask, that third or fourth ask to go vegetarian or like go vegan on 3 days a week instead of 1 day a week. You know, it's like it's important to have all of those people doing those asks. I think it's important to have the people promoting Meatless Monday so that when the person that promotes vegetarian comes along, that Meatless Monday participant is like, oh, I'm already doing Meatless Monday, so that's not that big of a step. And we need the people that are saying, you know, you should really go vegan if you care about animals to be there to usher people further along down the line. And it kind of feels like this article is just saying that we just need people to be promoting eating fewer animals because that's more likely to be something someone's going to want to do. So we should just be promoting that. And that, but you know, it's like, you need to have a clear message of what it is that ultimately is going to be the best thing for animals. And of course that is to stop exploiting them in general. And so finally, you know, the article concludes by saying, quote, "So please, fellow animal advocates, if you are overwhelmed with an urge to disrupt, whether in a Chipotle or at a Chris Christie support rally or a college lecture, put down the megaphone. Remember, you'll catch and compassionately release more bees with honey." And I think that that statement applies to any type of activism that you're doing. And that statement doesn't need to include, we should also support people or try and get people to promote eating less meat. To me, that's just like, yeah, you can, there's ways to get people to go vegan or consider reducing consumption in an effort to be vegan by, you know, effectively refining our messages and being compassionate and not, you know, being aggressive and angry and yelling and stuff. And those things might have their place. But, you know, as far as the one-to-one activism goes, you know, that, it doesn't seem like that conclusion needs to be attached to an article talking about getting more more meat-eating animal advocates out there. And I guess one final note is that I think it's all important in how the language that we use. And that is, you know, when I'm talking to people about going vegan, when someone says, I was thinking about doing Meatless Monday, I always say, that's awesome. That's a great first step. You know, so it's just like little things like that where it's sort of reinforcing that that's not the end of the line. That's an awesome step to take. That's all you really need to do, in my eyes, to make sure to have the best of both worlds. Make sure that you're promoting the small steps that seem manageable, but while still sort of having people keep their eye on the prize and be like, hey, don't worry about going vegan right now. If it feels overwhelming, let's find a good pace for you. And again, studies show that those who do it more gradually are the ones that are most likely to stick with it as well.
Yeah. It's like in all of life, it's important to think about how, not just what you're saying, but how you're saying things, how that's going to affect your message that you're getting across.
Absolutely. So I think that concludes our discussion. Was there anything else that you wanted to say about it, Paul?
Yeah, I just wanted to say, of course, as always, we want to know what you're thinking. So email us at thebeardedvegans@gmail.com, comment on our Instagram, or just any way you can. Get in touch with us. Let us know if you agreed or disagreed. Because this was I liked this article because I feel like both of us had some things that we kind of liked about it and some things that we, a lot more things that we disagreed with it. So it wasn't just one of those really one-sided things that we attacked like we usually do. But yeah, let us know what you think.
Absolutely. And, you know, let us know your general thoughts on Meatless Monday, on sort of all or nothing veganism. There's so much to explore there. This is only just sort of the tip of the iceberg with those things. So we're just going to take a quick break, and then we are going to come right back with our interview with the vegan black metal chef.
Hey everyone, this is Paul of The Bearded Vegans. Thanks so much for listening. I just wanted to let you know that The Bearded Vegans is part of the Commentist Network, and you can find us on iTunes and Stitcher. And I would encourage you to learn more about the show at thecommentist.com. That's thecommentist.com. We also have a lot of other great shows on the Commentist Network. I do two other shows. One of them is called Continuous Improvement. That's just a kind of general positivity podcast. And then I do one with my brother and some of my other friends called Roll to Hit, which is a Dungeons and Dragons podcast. So yeah, please check all those out. Thanks for listening again, and let's get back to the show.
Our guest today is Brian Manowitz. He is better known worldwide for bringing diabolically delicious meals to the masses as the vegan black metal chef. Brian, welcome to the show.
Greetings, everyone.
So for those who are not initiated, although you have plenty of views on your YouTube channel, so I'm sure most people listening are aware, you create cooking videos, and they feature you in full corpse paint and faux leather and chainmail, and you're preparing meals in what looks like a dungeon / kitchen with candles and very fancy cutlery and all that stuff. And it's pretty evident that you put a lot of effort into every video that you put out. So I was wondering if you could just sort of describe the process of start to finish, what goes into making a vegan black metal chef video.
Yeah, much appreciated. A lot of effort does go into each video. I guess it sort of goes that I will film the episode. The filming actually only takes a night. I don't refilm everything a million times. If how something is filmed, that's just how it goes. It's kind of a one take sort of deal. And people ask, oh, why don't you include like show us your outtakes or whatever? Like the outtakes are in the videos, people. So I leave them right in there. So I'll film the episode, then I'll spend about a week or a week and a half or 2 weeks editing it down to kind of gross editing, getting it pretty much how I want it. Then the longest aspect of it is the music creation. I write all of the music in all the episodes. I record, mix, and master everything myself. And I hand play all the instruments except for the drums. The drums I program. And so that takes a significant bit of time. That takes two to 4 weeks or so of writing the music and then doing the vocals over that, and then kind of doing final editing stuff and putting in subtitles. And if I have absolutely nothing else going on in life, I can get one done in maybe a month, month and a half. But since that's never the case, it often takes more than that.
Right on. Well, I'm sure everyone out there appreciates all the effort that goes into it. And something that I noticed right off the bat with your videos is that you seem to pretty strictly not include measurements. And that was something I was curious. Was that your initial plan? You just hate measurements, or is that a part of making everything more accessible? What was your thought process that went into that?
Yeah, well, I hate measurements. And to me, veganism, what aspect? Veganism is all about liberation to me. And part of that is liberating mind. And to understand the general concepts of what's going on in the cooking, if you have a strong foundation of the concepts of what's going on, the exact amount of things do not matter so much. You can tailor that to what you want. I mean, you'll see some relative proportions, and you know how much salt you want. You know how much spice or chili powder or whatever it is that you like. So you can kind of tailor that to you and to your needs. A lot of times when people make recipes, they are cooking for eight people or whatever. And what if you're just cooking for you or yourself and one other person? So really just having a solid foundation of the concepts liberates your mind to not worry about the measurements. And without that locking in of, oh, I need exactly this much of this, exactly this much of that. First of all, you need tools to do that. And that's even a barrier. Even that those initial measuring tools are a barrier for a lot of people. They just don't have those. But even beyond that, if you can sort of liberate your mind to let that go, then you can understand the general concepts. And after 2 to 3 times watching a video, probably feel pretty confident about making a dish, or at least making a dish with some either short notes or even along to the video.
Right on. And it seems like someone could watch your videos to learn how to make vegan meals, but also just to learn how to sort of cook in general and how to sort of season dishes and things of that nature.
Exactly.
Cool. Well, so one is obviously not born a vegan black metal chef. And I was wondering, you know, what was the journey like for you both, you know, from going vegan and then transitioning into creating the vegan black metal chef?
Yeah, well, I guess now I've been vegan for, I guess, about 14, 15 years or so. Maybe 15, 16. About 15 years or so. And I guess I've been doing this for almost 4 years. or just about 4 years. And first went vegan. I was vegan in my first year of college. And I think I have sort of the most typical why I went vegan story in existence. I had a girlfriend in high school that went vegetarian. And at that time, I said, well, I recognize that is the right way to go, but I'm not ready for that yet. So I didn't do anything in high school. And then my first year of college, I saw that she didn't die. and said, well, if I recognize that's the right way to go, then really, what am I so afraid of? And I kind of recognized it as a fear of myself and not like a fear of any kind of thing in general. It was just this sort of nebulous fear, nebulous like social conditioning. And I couldn't live with myself with that just weird fear like that. So I went vegetarian. And then about two or so months later, I went to an animal rights group meeting on the campus of the school I was going to, University of Florida at the time, and saw a couple videos and said, okay, now I'm vegan. And then fast forward, I guess, 11 or so years from then, when I first was about to make the vegan Black Man Chef stuff, I guess 11, 12 years past that, I said, wow, well, I think my food tastes awesome. It's cheap as hell, and it's not that difficult to make. And these are all kind of things that people think veganism isn't. And I said, well, I need to tell the world about this. Like, I think I live a very doable form of veganism, quite honestly, for everyone in a everyone in the citied world. So I thought about making some sort of cooking show. But I don't like cooking shows. They kind of put me to sleep and they're boring. So I kind of combined my passions of making music and black metal music in particular and vegan cooking and made the cooking show I wanted to see. And luckily a few other people see it too.
And did you feel like there was a natural connection between black metal and veganism, or is just these are two things that I love and I got to put them together?
Exactly. To me, it has no inherent connection. It's just two aspects of myself that I like.
Cool. And so you mentioned that you went to an animal rights group on campus. Did that lead you to do any activism with them, or was Black Metal Chef sort of your first foray into making new vegans?
Oh, no. I did a ton of activism with them.
Cool. What kind of activism were you engaged in?
It was all sorts of stuff. The group was called Animal Activists of Alachua. And as a little side note, one of the other people from that same year also started the National Museum of Animals, and she's going to kill me for getting it wrong. The National Museum of Animals and the Environment or something, like basically an animal rights museum out in L.A. And a few other people have gone and done really cool activism stuff from that group. But I mean, it was all sorts of stuff from protests to setting up school functions, trying to set up debates between school scientists and someone coming in to talk about anti-vivisection and all sorts of stuff along those natures. I mean, leafleting, flyering, tabling, like different events, kind of putting on precursors to a veg fest like around there and that time, and yeah, kind of all those things,
the whole gamut. And do you consider being a Black Metal Chef to be activism, or where do you sort of picture yourself within that kind of movement?
I guess a form of activism. It's maybe passivism, as in I mean, I just kind of put it out there, and it's definitely anything that gets people to say the word vegan is activism in essence, like, because you're just bringing it to the conscious mind of people, if they like the association with that, even better. But it's the activism of telling people what to do as opposed to the activism of telling people what not to do. I think both are important. Sometimes I think the telling people to do part requires a whole lot more work than just telling people what not to do. Because you have to, if you only tell people what not to do, then there's really just a void in their life, and they don't always take the initiative to sort of figure that other part out. So they'll really just kind of resist it. But if you show people what to do, then they can kind of replace behaviors with other behaviors.
Absolutely. I view what you do as, you know, essential, because you can give someone the why, but if you don't give them the how, it's essentially useless. So,
exactly.
So right on. And so since the you started the Vegan Black Metal Chef, the first video was for the Pad Thai, which I just checked, and it had nearly 3 million views on it. And did you anticipate that you would get such a huge reaction out of people? I think it hit 1 million views, like, very quickly.
Yeah, I guess I had no idea, because prior to making that, I really didn't really watch YouTube. YouTube first came out, I was like, that's a dumb idea. Who wants to see other people's home videos? And so I kind of got that wrong. And I didn't really watch too much YouTube before that. So honestly, I didn't know when things were kind of going crazy. I didn't really know that was very out of the ordinary or not. People were telling me it was, but I just didn't really have an idea.
And what type of people have been attracted to your videos? Is it people you would expect, or just totally out of left field? Like, who do you find to be coming to your videos?
It's all over the place. Everything from metalheads to vegan hippies to grandmothers to all sorts of stuff. It's kind of a pretty wide range.
Right on. And yeah, it's certainly very accessible, so I can imagine a whole swath of people would be checking it out. I first saw you do a live demo at the Charlotte Veg Fest earlier this year, and you know, the Veg Fest audience is not your typical black metal audience. It seems like they might be people that aren't even familiar that black metal is a thing, and you have a very pronounced look and way of presenting the food. And what kind of reaction do you get at these types of events? And is there people that just love it or hate it, or where does it fall?
The events, the live stuff is usually all pretty positive. It's always an incredibly varied group that comes out to see it. It's never like a very homogeneous population. It's very, very heterogeneous. People seem to dig it, especially once they try the food. And I mean, I don't even get to try it to see how it is, but I always hear from afterwards, like how surprised and how good tasting the food was. And that I made 3 dishes in front of them from start to finish in about an hour. I had 3 dishes, which equals many meals. It probably would equal like maybe 6 or 7 meals to a person that was made in about an hour. And in the case of the Charlotte Veg Fest, out in the middle of a parking lot, essentially, like with very, very basic tools. I mean, some 2 electric burners and some water. I don't know, it's usually pretty positive.
And yeah, I think that people that are coming to Veg Fest just to sort of see what the whole thing is about, they probably have a certain misconception or a preconceived notion of what veganism is about. And then they see you and it totally just smashes it. And it's like, oh, these people can have fun. There's humor. It's cheap and tasty and accessible. So it's always interesting to see people walking by and sort of seeing your demo and tilting their head a little bit, and then going and sitting down and enjoying the whole presentation.
Absolutely.
Yeah, so the reason we wanted to get you on the show at this point was because right now you're conducting a Kickstarter for the Satanic Spellbook, and could you explain to our listeners what the Satanic Spellbook is?
Absolutely. So this is my debut cookbook, where I don't plan on being a crazy lifelong cookbook author. I'm not going to put out 12 million of these things. So this is essentially my tomb of wisdom. It takes me a very long time to make the episodes. So this is going to sort of get it all out. It's essentially also a cookbook for people that don't really like cookbooks. I'm not a huge fan of cookbooks in general. Every time I make something out of a cookbook, it usually comes out bland, or like I'm just like, oh, people just have different tastes than I do, or something. And so this cookbook also has no measurements in it, and it's really teaches the concepts of a huge variety of vegan cooking. And then you apply then there's recipes to apply the concepts. And in those recipes, there's a picture of every step along the way of what your food should be looking like at each and every step that things change. And there's also a video that goes along with each and every thing in the book. So they're not going to be as produced as the ones that you see on the YouTube channel. But they'll all have they're all going to have spike dishes. They're all going to have metal playing in the background with me talking over it. But you're going to get a video of each and everything in the book. And then beyond that, you're going to see how to apply those concepts with different variations to make a huge array of things. And for one example, the concept of mixing vegan mayo with vinegar and other things can make everything from ranch dressing to potato salad to eggless egg salad to jackfruit chicken salad to all sorts of different things. So you take one concept and you learn how to make a variety of things with it, and there will be a video for each and everything in the book.
Right on. Well, that certainly seems very different from your average cookbook. And what kind of perks can people get for contributing to the Kickstarter?
So right now, of course, you can get there's a whole lot of perks on the Kickstarter for anyone just coming in. The first several rewards are kind of the most basic. Basically, hey, here's the ebook. Here's the physical book. And a couple little variations on that, but I've beyond that, you can get shirts, you can get hoodies, you can get spiked dishes, you can get spiked rubber arm bracers, you can get a variety of different things. And I've allowed people to message me and create any combination of things that they want in a backing tier. Like if I don't have, like let's say you wanted two books, a shirt, a hoodie, and a DVD, then if that tier isn't already up, you just message me. I price those out. Everything is kind of the fair market price. I'm not overcharging for anything in this. Everything is going to be the regular price, and even a little bit of a discount at the higher tiers. And I'll just kind of price it out, and I'll make that tier for you. So don't be shy if you don't see what you want. There's everything from that to even promotion of your band or business on my book and Twitter and whatnot.
And what's the best way for people to find it? Just go to veganblackmetalchef.com?
Yeah, veganblackmetalchef.com. That'll be the first blog post on there. And so you can find it that way. You can on at the front of any of the Vegan Black Metal Chef videos, you'll see a link to it in the description. If you go to the Facebook Vegan Black Metal Chef, it'll be there. At any channel where you're looking at my stuff, you're going to see it.
All right. No stone left unturned. And the Kickstarter ends on September 11th. Is that correct?
Correct.
Right. So you got a couple of days. Everyone who's listening, make sure you run out and take advantage of it before it goes down. All right. Well, Brian, thank you very much for joining us on the show today. Really looking forward to checking out the cookbook. Do you have any parting words for the listeners?
Thanks. I appreciate the support thus far. Everything's been really awesome. And order your copy now, and that will. It, I mean, no matter what, it's going to be a somewhat limited print run because I am printing printing a book costs a whole lot of money. So make sure to get yours now in the Kickstarter to kind of make sure that you in general, because there's not going to be an unlimited amount of them.
Right on. Oh, and I forget if I mentioned that it's got, I think, over $47,000 right now. So the project is fully funded. So if you contribute, you're definitely going to be getting what you're contributing for.
Yes, exactly. It's basically pre-orders now. So it's no longer contributing and then hoping you get one. You're going to get one if you contribute.
Cool. All right. Well, right on. So once again, that's veganblackmetalchef.com. And of course, you can find Vegan Black Metal Chef on basically all the social media outlets. So pick your favorite, go find it, go find the Kickstarter. Brian, thank you very much for joining us.
Thank you so much. I appreciate it.
Cool.
So we hope you enjoyed the interview with the Vegan Black Metal Chef. As always, feel free to contact us. Our email is thebeardedvegans@gmail.com. Our Instagram is @thebeardedvegans. Let us know what you think about the episode. Let us know if you have any other topics of discussion that you want us to talk about. Let us know if you have any catchphrases. The end.
And tune in next episode. We will be discussing the new cut of Cowspiracy. This is The Bearded Vegans signing off.
I don't eat no meat, no dairy, no sweets. Only ripe vegetables, fresh fruit and whole wheat. I'm from the old school. My household smell like soul food, bro. Curry falafel.